Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. Back at it on the John Chuckery Show. I'm hanging out with you on this SmackDown Friday evening, 404-741-0929. That is the Solomon Brothers Diamond text line to be a part of the show. Don't forget, download your radio.com app. That way you can always catch us on the go. We know you're not in your car as often, but when you listen to the radio station, radio.com app's the easiest way to do it. Take your device, right? Like your smartphone. You got your Alexa speakers. You've got your tablet. You've got your Swatch watch. You've got an Intellivision or a Game Boy or a Sega Genesis or Xbox. Just download it onto something. Maybe your 8-track player. Just download it. That way you can always catch us when you're on the go. Social media at 929 The Game, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. Follow us there. As always, the best way to be a part of the show, follow myself on my Twitter page at JMCH316, at JMCH316. A few people jumping on board and following me here this evening, so thank you for all of that. We'll hear from Jason Longshore coming up at 8:20, who was on with Dukes and Bell earlier today, and his reaction to the Frank DeBoer. Just very quickly, because I don't want to, because trust me, I could take up the whole segment again with this. Some people are like, well, you know, Frank lost the team. Really? He did? Where? Where? Yeah, guys complained about his style. Let me ask you a question. I'm going to ask you a real honest question. Which one of those two guys you think has more accountability for his players? Be honest. Be intellectually honest. You think part of it isn't the fact that what accountability has Dan put on those guys? Because basically what you guys are telling me is, because Dan's got better bumper sticker slogans, because we do write longer, embrace the suck, fast and furious, Hunger Games Index, the Bears loose, iron sharpens iron. That's why? Because there aren't results, guys. Miss me with your 6-2 stuff. That they don't give you trophies for half a year's worth of good play. I mean, sorry. I will ask a question. Tell me which one of those two guys you think holds his team more accountable for their play. Ask yourself honestly. You can tell me about brotherhood and all that kind of stuff. Again, that stuff doesn't mean anything if you don't win. You can miss me with the whole brotherhood thing. I'm in this thing to see a parade. I've been in this town longer than Dan, longer than Matt, longer than Julio. Okay, I just want to see him win a title. I don't want to see the best quarterback in the history of the franchise, maybe the best player in the history of the franchise, just wither away and nothing to show for it. Nothing. Nothing to show for it. Yeah, it's been a nice run for Matt. You know, it was a nice run for Steve Barkowski. You know, Chris Chandler had a couple of nice years, but it didn't mean nothing. At the end of the day, it didn't mean nothing. And I don't want Matt and Julio's time and all these guys to not mean nothing. To say, well, you know, they had, you know, because it is, it's the most successful, you know, part of the franchise in its history. But you got too many talented players to not have the ultimate culmination in it. That's reality, man. Embrace the suck. Anyway, All right, so Alex Anthopoulos was on with Dukes and Bell yesterday. We did not get a chance to go over all of this interview with the guy. So you know how we do it on this show. We play you some clips of what the person had to say, whether it's somebody from the Falcons, Braves, what have you, and then we react to it. And, you know, again, I don't usually get a chance to listen to these interviews live or anything because I'm a working stiff and 95 million things going on at once, so I don't get a chance to listen. So this is sometimes the first chance to hear what some of these guys had to say. So let's start with Double A talking about where and what is the biggest concern of this Braves roster.
GM, you're built to worry. You're always trying to think ahead on all kinds of things, and you're always, and I think that keeps you on your toes and doesn't allow you to get complacent, but I'm always thinking about, are we good enough offensively, our rotation, who our next group of starters, the bullpen, how are they throwing the ball, how do they look, who's the next group there, you know. And then, more important, I guess the number one, if you're going to have to just really pin down a concern, is just health. You know, we've had a lot of instances over the course of this camp where guy wakes up in the morning, look, I got a sore throat or I have a headache, and you start to think the worst. You go get that guy a test, you keep him away from camp and so on. And now that the season starting, you know, that those are going to be the days of, you know, what if you have a guy who's scheduled to pitch that night and he tells you, look, I'm not feeling right, something's off, and it might just be the cold, but you can't take that chance, and you got to keep him away from the club, and you know, how is that going to impact things? So I do think those clubs that obviously, you know, beyond baseball injuries, elbows, shoulders, all that kind of stuff, just keeping everybody following protocol, staying healthy, I think is going to be the most important thing and the most concerning thing.
Well, certainly so far so good, you know, for all of it. And while, you know, nobody wants to see Freddie Freeman get sick and be knocked out, you know, for several days, the fact is that it happened before the season started. And certainly, you know, for the success of this club, this would have been a huge blow if, let's say, we're 15 games in and now Freddie's missing, you know, 3 weeks of action and things like that. So, look, I think all the major sports have figured out their bubble aspect of this and have a way to get all of this, you know, done and in and such like that. So, you know, my biggest concern, you know, for the roster is still once you get past Fried and Soroka. You know, what is Fulton Nevich going to be like? What is Sean Newcomb like back in the starting rotation? Who gets that fifth spot? We talked to Gabe Burns last night. We talked about Kyle Wright. So I still think that once you get past the top two guys, I still think that there are lots of lingering questions about this rotation. Let's hear from Double A as he talks about what happened in the Yasiel Puig deal.
Yeah, so I mean, obviously I think, you know, I don't know how much I can talk about or say. I mean, look, there's no doubt. We explored signing him. I think that's stating the obvious. And, you know, he came out and did post on either Instagram or Twitter, I don't remember which one, but that he did test positive and so on, and that's something that he shared with everybody else. And, you know, without getting too much into specifics, because I don't know what I can or can't say, just generally speaking, look, if there's good players that are out there that we think can fit into our clubhouse, we do a lot of work on that. Will guys fit in our clubhouse? We're going to explore it, especially we have no idea how many players we're going to need, you know, beyond the regular baseball injuries, which we know will happen, just the piece with the virus. I mean, Will Smith is a great example. He feels great. He just has not had a negative test yet. And we still don't know how long that's going to take. Obviously, we're not going to take any chances, but same thing with Freddie Freeman. We just didn't know when his test results would finally come through, and they did all of a sudden. So, you know, like anything, you just don't know how many players you're going to need, how many more players you're going to lose from now until the end of the year. So we're always going to be on the hunt to go try to add players any chance that we can.
So I don't know that I said before, I'm not 1,000% convinced that Yasiel Puig still can't be an Atlanta Brave at some point. I mean, obviously he's got a quarantine, he's got a test, you know, negative a couple times and this, that, and the other. So, you know, maybe in a month we look back and Yasiel Puig finds his way, you know, into Atlanta. I mean, the reality is no team can sign him right now if he's in the middle of quarantining and he's still tested positive, and, you know, he's going to have, you know, a couple of negative tests for any team to want to be in. But the Braves had to do what they had to do. I mean, and that wasn't a matter of not wanting Yasiel Puig, but protocol is that can't sign him if he's got a positive test and he's going to miss time and you got to quarantine. So I don't think the book is completely written on that, but certainly in the short term, the Braves are going to have to figure out a different pathway on this. Let's hear from AA on how he thinks that Braves pitching staff is going to hold up, especially Mike Fultonevich.
I know it was a topic of discussion, and velocity and things like that, and all that stuff was real. I mean, it happened that game, so you can't run from that. He's completely healthy. You know, that's one thing. That's one of the things that, you know, as a GM and as a training staff and coaching staff, you ask, everything okay? Any concerns? And now he feels good. He feels good. He's throwing strikes. Just, you know, the power of the stuff isn't the same right now. You know, ultimately, once you get into the season, is it adrenaline and all those things? We've had it before a little bit where the velocity's dipped in the past, and then it came back. So, and I wish I could tell you with certainty, we're going to see that guy that put up the 2 ERA for us the last 2 months of the year. You know, when you think about it, we called him up from Gwinnett. He's basically slid into our fifth spot in the rotation, and he was our best starter. And even you look at game two of the playoffs, we had lost the first game, backs against the wall. He stepped up huge and put a great game for us. But more importantly, those last 2 months, he pitched so well. He was our best starter in August and September to help us win the division. We know what he's capable of doing. 2018 the same way, but no doubt, he did not throw the ball well. And, he'll be lined up here to pitch game four. And we'll see how it goes. But we're optimistic that the bell rings and the games count. And we see the guy that's thrown the ball well for us in the past.
Certainly, the issue has not been the arm of Mike Fultonevich from the standpoint of, does he have the stuff and the talent in that? He does. You know, he's arguably the best guy that they have on the staff, you know, that can get outs without contact. And when he's right, Fultonevich can be a dominant pitcher himself. The problem has always been between the ears. It's always been between the ears. And even Mike has said that about in the past, the mental aspect of it. Nobody questions how good his arm is, how live his arm is, what he can do. People question what's between the ears at times. And that's where the problem gets to be. Let's hear from AA talking about Cole Hamels and the expectation of when we'll see him.
Yeah, you know what? I wish I could put a timeline on it. So he had the issue with the weighted ball in the offseason, and obviously his shoulder flared up there. We got that resolved, obviously, during the pandemic and so on. He was fine. He was throwing bullpens when he came into camp and continued to throw bullpens and was getting ready to gear up for a live BP. And then in his last bullpen, you know, it's interesting, Snit was down there in the bullpen. He came back and said, wow, he looks really good. And the next day, I believe, or maybe a day after, he just said his triceps flared up on him and was sore. So he had pitched through a lot of things with the Cubs in the second half last year, and in hindsight, he probably shouldn't have, and his performance was not good. So now, you know, knowing that we need good Cole Hamels, we need healthy Cole Hamels to help us, the plan is basically to back him off. He's still throwing. He's throwing long toss right now. We're going to continue to monitor him day to day, but at some point, that long toss will turn into throwing back off a mound again and throwing bullpens. And then, you know, where it's going to take time is just you're going to need him to build up to be a starter and you go five innings or four innings at least. And the rosters are starting at 30 right now, but 2 weeks from now, we're going to dip down to 28. And then 2 weeks beyond that, we're going to dip down to 26. So we can have guys like Kyle Wright throw three innings or four innings with expanded rosters. But once we start to cut down, when we're bringing a guy that's going to go into the rotation back, we need him more built up. And that's where I think it's ultimately going to take the most time is getting him built back up. Whereas a Will Smith, we'll just have to build him back up to throw one inning. And that shouldn't take any time at all when he does get cleared.
Well, here's the reality. You know, in talking about the Cubs down a stretch, you know why he pitched, you know, Alex? Because the Cubs paid him a lot of money and they needed him. You know, they were fighting for a playoff spot. In case you didn't see, they were trying to get in the playoffs. And by the way, they changed managers over the course of the year. So, yeah, I don't, should he have pitched? But they were trying to win. They wanted to get the playoffs. They paid him a lot of money. They needed him. Now, you know, $18 million later, okay, well, we don't know when. Okay, but keep telling me what a good signing that was. Okay. Lordy. All right. When we get back, Jason Longshore, he joined Dukes and Bell earlier today. Of course, Frank DeBoer out, mutually parting ways, the Atlanta United manager is. We'll hear what he had to say up next about the situation. This is the John Chuckwood Show. Hanging out with you here on this SmackDown Friday, Sports Radio Nights on the Game, and on your radio.com app. Back with you on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It is the John Chuckwood Show, hanging out on this SmackDown Friday evening. 404-741-0929. That is the Solomon Brothers Diamond text line. Feel free to leave us a comment there. Of course, asking you to download the radio.com app, because with you not being in your car as often, that's the easiest way to listen to the radio station, radio.com app. Also, to social media at 929TheGame for the station. Follow myself on Twitter. Be a part of the show that way. It's at JMCH316, at JMCH316. Well, as we said, a busy day here in Atlanta today as, Braves lose their season opener to the New York Mets. A great pitcher's duel between Mike Soroka and Jacob DeGrom. And, of course, Frank DeBoer, let go, earlier today. I will ask the same question. When things weren't going well, which coach do you think held their guys more accountable? I go back and I say this, when we talk about Dan's run with the Falcons. Dan in 5 years has had 3 5-game losing streaks. Now, they've not been without Matt and Julio and guys like that for any sort of stretch at a time. Should that roster with those guys, should they have had 3 5-game? It's not easy to lose 5 games in the NFL in a row, because you're bound to run into somebody who's not very good. You're bound to run into somebody who doesn't play well, isn't as talented as you, over a 5-game stretch. Because that's almost a third of the season. He's had 3 5-game losing streaks. But the players love him. Sure, if there's no accountability, if the accountability has to come from the owner threatening to fire everybody, how often did Vic Beasley play like a starting NFL defensive tackle, or defensive end, I should say? How often in his career? How many? You can count a lot of games where you looked at him and said, that guy shouldn't start for an NFL team. And Dan's the one who said, I'm going to lay hands on him. Oh, he's going to love me or hate me in the spring. Didn't mean a hill of beans. It's all talk. And that's my point. It's all talk. You think Frank DeBoer was kind of pity in those guys? Or you think he jumped their crap and when they didn't play well? Okay. Jason Longshore, color analyst for all things Atlanta United. He joined Dukes and Bell today. Speaking of somebody who knows about this, funny, because we had Jason on last night talking about what's got to change and this, that, and the other. And, there's going to be a lot of changes now, especially now that we don't know either when Atlanta United is going to get back into it. Guy started off asking Jason today about what his thoughts were about the decision that was made.
I didn't expect it. I didn't expect it now. I didn't expect it in this way. Like you said, it's a mutual parting of the ways. You have quotes from both sides in the press release. I mean, Frank DeBoer won 31 of 55 matches here in Atlanta. The last three were not good, and we've talked about it all week. The last three were not at the standard that Atlanta United is supposed to be at. And there were some things that didn't look right. And that's, I'm assuming, has something to do with this. The match against Columbus is where alarm bells went off for me in two different ways. The team came out very, very flat in a must-win game, and after they conceded a goal, a bad goal to concede, where Columbus strung together a number of passes and it was just too easy, there wasn't a response until halftime. Now, where I thought maybe there would be more time to sort out those mistakes was because of that response in the second half, which was very different than the first half. But it was three games with three bad first halves, and the first half got worse each time. And that last one, without a response after going a goal down in a must-win game, that's pretty shocking for a team with this kind of standard.
It is Jason Longshore. He and Mike Conte, they're going to do an emergency edition of it. What are you doing? Stoppage time? What's going on?
You're stoppage time, 2:45 okay. On Facebook.com/929 the game.
So, Jason, we had talked about, you know, the turnover, and I was saying this to Mike. I mean, you know, you have a roster that doesn't look like anything like the team which made a great run. It was an ugly start, admittedly. We're all like doom and gloom because we were so used to Tata last year. But, I mean, overall, what was your opinion of Frank here?
Overall, I think, I mean, 31 wins in 55 games, two trophies. It's not nearly as bad as some would lead you to believe. It wasn't always as cohesive as it needed to be. And it was a tough spot because you come in after a championship. You know, you come in after a trophy's been won, and you come in after a manager in Tata Martino who was beloved by the fan base. He was the first, and it was always going to be hard to follow that. And Frank de Boer, I think his style, I think the way he wants to play, you look at where he had his greatest success at Ajax in the Netherlands, a club that he played for. He was involved in their academy, and he managed them to four straight Dutch titles. No other manager in the history of the club had done that. That's a club with a lot of young players, and it's a developing kind of club. They bring young players up. They move them on later on. This was not that. This was a club that had a lot of big personalities in it, a lot of big personalities coming off of a championship. That's tough, and I thought it started rough. But the second half of the season was very good. They hit some really good highs that you could put up against any win from the first 2 years in the second half of 2019. This year is really hard to compare because you've lost your number one scorer in Josef Martínez, and you're dealing with things that no other manager in the history of the game has ever dealt with this pandemic. It's really tough where you're at right now, but something doesn't seem right with the way they played, especially starting matches in Orlando.
Jason Longshore, our guest. It is Dukes and Bell. Breaking news today as we start the show. Frank de Boer out as manager of Atlanta United. Someone says to me, this man won two trophies last year. The bar is really, really high now as for who they can go out and replicate that right away. My response is this the most attractive job in MLS?
It should be. It should be because of what we've seen today. Two trophies is not enough to save you at this point because it's a mutual thing. I mean, that's what the press release says. So it's a thing where it wasn't working, and it wasn't working to the level it's supposed to. Even two trophies doesn't buy you more time to get it back to where it should be because there's no way around it. These three games in Orlando were not at that level. It's a huge job in MLS because you have the largest fan base. You have the owner that will spend money and has spent money in ways that we haven't seen in this league. And a team with incredible ambition. And if you are a top manager, you want to go to a club that has that ambition, that's going to give you the players to help you win and will not be satisfied with mediocre performances.
Jason Longshore is with us, guys. Best soccer guy in town. He and Mike Conte again about 2:45 special edition of Stoppage Time talking about Frank de Boer parting ways with, again, Atlanta United. We were just talking, Carl and I, on text, Jason, that, you know, in this town, I guess we're very patient, maybe too patient, some organizations, some fans. I like the fact, if you feel it's a bad fit or it's just, you know, again, it happened so quickly, but I like the idea that if you feel it's not working, there's no point in continuing. And you've got a month where there's nothing going on in this sport. We don't know if the sport's going to continue, so why not now?
That's a good point. It's such a weird time. I mean, there is really nothing in pro sports to compare what we're going through right now. There's nothing to be five games into a regular season and not know when the next game is scheduled. You know, we don't know. We don't know what the season looks like from here. In some ways, Mike, you're dead on in that if you're going to change it, this season becomes kind of a wash and you're preparing for 21, which you hope will be back to a normal season. But in other ways, it's really difficult now because if you're going to bring in a manager from overseas, which I think you'd have to consider at this point, who's available and who is willing to move to another country during this? Mm-hmm. It changes the landscape right now in ways that we've never talked about, not even from Atlanta teams as a whole, but in American soccer, because there's different things that come to play right now. Do you want to move your family to the United States during a pandemic? That's not an easy decision for some.
Before we let you go, these things are not done with one individual move, one individual thing. It's usually a variety of things that have transpired. And you know, I go back to the beginning of last year where Mike and I were very critical, and we saw Frank and talked to him about it. He came on our show, and, you know, we said we were not happy with the way things started. Obviously, they turned that around, and we had a chance to do what we ultimately wanted to do, which was play for a cup. Jason, in your opinion, was there one or two things that you really that stood out in your mind that really maybe set this course that maybe most soccer fans or Atlanta United fans were not aware of?
Not that I'm aware of outside of the chatter last year, and there was a lot of it. There mm-hmm. were a lot of things said from players, and there were a lot of things that were hinted at and a lot of things like that. But you won two trophies, and it was much better at the end of the season. I mean, you're talking about a team that was third in the league in scoring. You're talking about a team that was in the Eastern Conference Final and outside of a couple of great goals from Toronto would have hosted MLS Cup. Would that have changed everything? We're not going to know. This year,
yeah, go ahead, Jason.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I apologize for cutting you off. I know in this sport, more than like maybe NBA coaches or hockey coaches, coaches get fired all the time. English Premier League, mm-hmm. you see it in Spain, you see it in all the leagues. I mean, guys that have success get fired. So it might be different for some Atlanta United fans to get their heads around. But let me ask you this. We love the style of Tata. And when I try to explain this to novices, I say we were an aggressive attacking style. We might get burned on the counter, but aesthetically it was fun to watch too. Is that accurate? And is that something we might be looking to get back to?
Somewhat. Tata was kind of unique. I think there's an idea that he was a wide open attacking manager when a lot of times he was a counter attacking manager. And he was moving in the direction that I think Frank DeBoer was intending to go. I don't think Frank got where he wanted this team to be. I don't know if he ever did. And there's a lot of reasons for that. We'll have to go deeper into it in some written pieces over on the website and in stoppage time, because you're getting into tactics. You're getting into the change of the roster from 19 to 20. You're getting into some bad luck. I mean, the Joseph injury is a bad luck. You know, there's nothing you can do about that. And the response wasn't good enough. It's tough. I think always this team is going to want a manager that wants to play an attacking style, that wants to play a proactive style. You can do that in a number of ways. It can be direct. It can be vertical. It can be possession. It can be in a different shape. It can be any of those things. But this team wants to play in a proactive manner. And that's what you're going to be looking for here. And I think you're going to be looking for a manager with a lot of ambition, because this club's not satisfied with open cups and supporter shields here and there. It's satisfied with MLS Cups. Ultimately, it's going to be satisfied with a CONCACAF Champions League as well, and that's a big bar to hit.
Check out Jason, emergency version of Stoppage Time that they're going to be doing on Facebook. So check that out. Jason, thanks for jumping on with this, man. Big news today. Appreciate you, bro.
Thanks, guys.
All right, coming up next, it will be time for What's Bugging Chuckery. We will get to all of that. It's the John Chuckery Show with you here live. Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. Back at it here on the John Chuckery Show. Hanging out with you on this Friday evening. 404-741-0929. Solomon Brothers Diamond text line to be a part of the show. At 929 The Game on social media, at JMCH316. Don't forget the radio.com app as well. Don't forget, too, coming up at 1040 tonight, we are going to do some Rank'em as it is a Friday evening. So we obviously do the dance party on Friday nights for the Brownlicker Music Hour, and then also do some Rank'em to end the week and have a little bit of fun with it. So that's all coming up a little bit later on in the show. Look, it is an interesting dichotomy between the Falcons and Atlanta United. And, you know, here's the thing. It's not like Arthur hasn't put all the resources imaginable into the Atlanta Falcons. I mean, think about the fact that really take a look since the Super Bowl year. You know, the Falcons have really gone out and spent as much money as they had to keep all their guys around. I mean, Dave, I'm not going to say that they've been reckless in their spending, but there hasn't been any. Listen, we went into this year saying, you know, into this offseason, the talk was, oh, the Falcons don't have any money. They can't do anything and this, that, and the other. Look, they've committed all this money to these caps and this, that, and these contracts and this, that, and the other. Then they go out and sign Dante Fowler. Then they go out and sign Todd Gurley and make a trade for Hayden Hurst and sign Laquon Treadwell. You know, part of that is, number one, yeah, you can find money in the NFL as far as how you can rig the cap. But like the Saints, you paid the piper. And what have the Saints done? They've tried to, you know, they've tried to do what they had to do to get themselves in the Super Bowl. Well, that's no different than the Falcons. The Falcons have been a let's roll the dice and, you know, we'll worry about down the road. And I'm not mad at them for that because it's trying to win. So it's not like they haven't, you know, this isn't the Atlanta Spirit Group that couldn't afford both teams. So the hockey team had to suffer to be able to put the resources into the basketball team. You know? Like that was the reality of the situation was, well, we'll keep Don Waddell. We're not going to make a change there because, well, we don't have the resources, so at least we're okay there, and we'll focus on the Hawks. It's not the way it is for Arthur. Falcons get everything they want. Thomas Dimitrov gets everything they want. And some people tweeted me some things about, you know, in Athletic, well, P.T. Martinez was there. Yeah, why do you think P.T. Martin is upset? You think when he plays like crap, Frank DeBoer just sits back and says, hey, man, do right longer. Hey, you know what, man? The bear's loose. Or you think he jumps his crap? My guess would be B. By the way, none of us know because none of us are in the locker room, including the Athletic. with all due respect. Sources say, remember, if you ain't first, you're hot takey. We're working on getting that trademark so we can get t-shirts printed. Anyway, we got to make some money off the show somehow, whatever like that. But it's funny when you get preached continuity on one hand, and then you hear something totally different. I mean, if they were willing to fire Frank DeBoer now, it makes you wonder, what did they see in Dan after a 1-7 first half start that said we need to keep this thing going? Why was that different? Why was that not get the ship right, see if we can right the ship? I mean, you had a scenario where people were convinced that, oh, Dan's not going to be back for the second half. The other 1-7, been a disappointment. Their defense stinks, this, that, and the other. That was the mantra and the talk for all of it. So why was it different in this scenario? We'll talk about this again a little bit later on in the program as well. So if any catch your interview with Eric Edholm, we'll play that a little bit later on in the show as well. Of course, top of the hour, we always do our Falcon Flyover, our news and notes. And this might be one of those times, by the way, too, in Falcon Flyover where I definitely disagree probably with what with what they had to say, but the analytics say what the analytics are. I was glad that it wasn't too over the top with the coverage. They had the fans, they had the pumped in noise in the background. You know, obviously Tom Gladden was on the call today because Jeff Francoeur, you know, he tested positive for COVID-19, so wasn't part of the call. So it was Chip and Tom Gladden having to start things off. By the way, too, are they doing the games back in Atlanta? I thought that wasn't that what the plan was? They're not up there in New York, right? They're not traveling and doing the games there. They're doing the games from here in Atlanta, right? I may be wrong about that, but I thought the idea was that the road announce crews weren't going to travel, that they would be doing the games, you know, remotely, I guess, if you will, just like the way we do radio and everything nowadays. So I may be wrong on that. Correct me if I am. Hit me up on Twitter, hit me up on the text line. But I thought the idea was they were not going to do the broadcast from the stadium, that the broadcast would be done remotely. But I think the national guys are doing it, right? The national the national ESPN guys are going to do them at the stadium. And then, you know, we saw Buster Olney last night. He's, I don't know, he's like in section 411 or something like that, you know, hanging out in the concourse level or whatever like that. And when it started raining, they told me I had to get out of there or whatever. So, but anyway, so I thought the guys were doing it remote on the local level, but I may be wrong about that. All right, speaking of things that we are wrong at, let's get to something we call What's Bugging Chuckery.
Don't look now, but somebody out there just got Chuckery ticked off. Like, that's hard.
Don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
It's time for What's Bugging Chuckery on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Now, look, everybody's an entrepreneur nowadays, right? And we're hearing about how, what do they call them? J-Rod, right? Isn't that what they're known as? That's J-Lo and Alex Rodriguez. They're called J-Rod, I think is the nickname on it. Dylan's a younger fella. He probably understands. I think I'm right on that. J-Rod is the nickname of them. Now, look, that's right. Okay, thank you. So, besides the fact that they're trying to buy the New York Mets and come up with the finances and everything like that, the group and everything by them, reports are now that they are investing in the Viagra-selling wellness startup company that's going to take over the Hims company. So if you've probably heard like 4-Hims, there's also a 4-Hers now and stuff like that. They've been spokespeople for it. Now they're looking at being part of the group that's going to invest and buy this Viagra selling company, which obviously means things are looking up for the two of them. I mean, now listen, we know when it comes to buying a major league team, the competition is stiff. Oh, wait. Look, I'm sure they'll make a good offer, you know, for the Mets. I'm sure it won't be something that they'll limp along and try. But listen, good for J-Rod, you know. Listen, everybody's got to make a buck, and I guess they've been spokesmen. You know, he's a spokesman for the 4-Hims. She's a spokesman for the Hers. So they got Hers and Hims. They're he-ing and she-ing and stuff like that. And listen, you know, God bless them for, you know, if he's getting the little, what is it, the little blue pill, you know, that is, you know, getting out of there. So, listen, you know, when you think about this really isn't a hard choice. Listen, as I was saying, they certainly have to, you know, they have to rise up to get the, They need the additional capital that it's going to take to fund a baseball team. Look, the reality is that, you know, if you're going to own a Major League Baseball team, and I think people listen, are J-Lo and A-Rod immensely wealthy? Yes. But it's a whole nother world when you get into a sports franchise. Okay? So it's a whole nother thing to own a sports team. And while you may be wealthy in the, you know, real world and your day-to-day life, you know, those guys that put the money up, and pretty much even those guys that do it have groups and everything that support them. It's not like that they're just, you know, not everybody's like Arthur. You know, even Arthur has a group. Even Arthur has minority owners within that help put up the money and things like that. And we've talked about, you know, the Oakland A's, and they have their groups and stuff like that. So, you know, certainly it's one of those things that you've got to have as much capital and liquid capital as you have. So it only makes sense that, listen, if you've got an up-and-coming, I mean, let's put it this way. You want a good, hard foundation. You want a good base with which to work with. Hence, you're going in and seeing if you can cash in, you know, on buying into this Viagra-based company. I mean, it only makes sense to take your shot, right? I mean, Sorry. You know. But, you know, listen, if you're going to own a baseball team, I mean, you can't just kind of squirt along and oh. Man. Anyway, that's what's bugging Chuckery. You know, hopefully we'll be here, knock on hardwood. I mean, 404-741-0929. That is the Solomon Brothers Diamond text line to be a part of the show here this evening as we're watching some WWE SmackDown. Pretty much SmackDown has found a way to every week have its lowest audience, even lower than the week before. If there's one thing out of this pandemic that we've learned is that wrestling desperately needs an audience. Wrestling needs its fans. To put on a quality wrestling program, you really need the fans and the crowd reaction to be able to put these matches together and such. It's not an easy thing to do without the crowds. And by the way, we didn't even talk about the horror show. That Bray Wyatt match, the Firehouse Fun, the Firefly Funhouse thing with Cena was fantastic. The retro of it, I said, man, I was up pumping my fist when Cena comes out in the NWO gear and they hit the music and I was all for it. I don't know what that was the other night. I mean, I'm not trying to be Jim Cornette with some of his takes, and I listen to Cornette all the time because I find him amusing, you know, with his thoughts. He's so aggravated by all of this, but boy, some of that stuff is like, you know, and some of the matches aren't, you know, they did the eye for an eye where you basically had to pop a guy's eyeball out to win the match. That was Seth Rollins and Rey Mysterio that did that. Now, when Rey Mysterio loses an eye for an eye match, he can't come back, right? I mean, he can't come back in wrestle, right? Because he doesn't have an eye, right? At the point of what that match is or what have you. But I don't know. Yeah, I'm all for the cinematic. I got no problem with that kind of stuff. But you gotta have it be somewhat based with some sort of wrestling or fight or there's nothing wrong with having a little bit of, because the whole Alexa Bliss thing and I don't know, she's Sister Abigail and all these kinds of crazy things. I mean, it is a little bit strange when you watch it and you try to figure out what all of that stuff is. So, look, this is, you know, they're in SummerSlam mode. I think they really thought that they'd be in front of crowds by SummerSlam. That's the next big pay-per-view coming up. That's one of the more important pay-per-views that they have. You could make a case that probably SummerSlam is, in their mind, maybe their number two pay-per-view of the year, probably over the other two tentpoles, Survivor Series and the Royal Rumble. The Royal Rumble has become a fun show, but you know, I think from what Vince has always looked at is from an important standpoint, this SummerSlam has always been his next biggest show. Think about some of the great SummerSlams in WWE history. You know, 88, 97, 98. There's a lot of great SummerSlam moments and things over the decades for Vince. So they're leading up to it. You know, they got to get themselves ready. You know, some of these ancillary pay-per-views are just kind of really make you shake your head and make you wonder about, okay, hopefully we can get some fans back soon because some of the stuff that they're putting out there right now is, whew. Like I said, I'm fans of Braun Strowman. I love the Fiend character. They've completely ruined that character or whatever like that, but if you're going to do the cinematic stuff, man, I don't know. I don't know. It's got to be the Undertaker stuff, fantastic. That stuff was, eh. All right, when we get back for the top of the hour, we'll be time for the Falcons flyover. It's your nightly look at all things Atlanta Falcons. We'll give you those stories up next. It is the John Chuckman Show, hanging out with you on this Friday evening. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and on your radio.com app.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.